freewheeling, spontaneous exchange of ideas and synergy that he was so proud of. But Ovitz was struck by how little exchange there was. Most of the lunch was a stream of consciousness monologue by Eisner. No one disagreed with anything he said. As the weeks went by, Ovitz came to think of the lunches as a waste of time. He was sometimes late and excused himself to make phone calls, which annoyed Eisner greatly. As one of the country's most successful agents, Ovitz was, by nature and experience, a deal-maker. He had revolutionized the motion picture industry by creating lucrative packages for his clients, and often negotiated multi-film production deals, first look or exclusivity arrangements, and office and overhead arrangements on studio lots. Ovitz, of course, was nearly always representing the talent, not the studios. The deals obviously gave his clients far more money than they could hope to earn on a single project. What they yielded the studios was often less tangible. Ongoing access to creative talent, as well as the cachet of being identified with star directors, actors, and writers through long-term commitments. Ovitz was aware of the pitfalls of such deals. A killer application as an agent and a disaster if you ran a studio, as he later put it. But naturally, Ovitz's determination to make things work immediately manifested itself in a flurry of attempted deal-making. One of the first people Ovitz contacted about doing business with Disney was Brad Gray, chairman and chief executive of Brillstein Gray, a television production and talent management company with high-profile clients like Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. Gray had been a client of Ovitz at CAA, and he was already in talks with Disney as well as other studios about some television production deals. As Ovitz later explained his reasoning, he wanted to arrange a deal for exclusive access to Gray's projects, as well as the talent he managed. And in return, Disney could offer Gray a chance to break out of television and into movies, with a production deal similar to the one that Ovitz had negotiated for Roth when he came to Disney. "Mr. Gray is an excellent executive," Ovitz explained. "He is the kind of person we needed to come into the Walt Disney Company and bring his company. He represented over 150 writers. Since he was a manager and not an agent, it would have been an amazing opportunity, because you would have the opportunity to really get a first crack at the management clients without having to pay for it. My point of view was that ABC was sliding at a geometric rate, and having worked in the network business, once a network goes on a downhill road, it can take 5 years to turn it around, and it's all cyclical. So we were watching NBC dominate, and I knew, because I represented Les Moonves, head of CBS, that CBS would really start to pick up, because he is very aggressive. And I thought we needed to be aggressive." Ovitz suspected Joe Roth wouldn't be happy about bringing Brad Gray in as a potential movie producer, but he assumed Roth would go along for the benefit of the TV studio and for the company overall, even if some of the cost had to come out of his studio budget. On that Monday afternoon, still Ovitz's first day at the company, Roth was back on Martha's Vineyard, resuming his vacation after talking to Ovitz in Aspen and on the subsequent flight to Los Angeles. He got a call from Jake Bloom, Gray's lawyer, who told him that Ovitz was offering Gray a deal that gave him the right to produce multiple feature films.